Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Kevin Zeese, who's an attorney and activist who served as Ralph Nader's spokesman in 2004 and is now co-director of It's Our Economy. He will discuss the ongoing demonstrations on Wall Street that have been met by police brutality. Kevin Zeese is planning on expanding the occupation of Wall Street to occupy Washington, D.C. on October the 6th, the 10th anniversary of the Afghanistan War. And then we'll look into deteriorating relations between the United States and Pakistan, where complaints about Pakistani duplicity that used to be muttered in private are now being publicly and bluntly stated by senior American officials like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Vali Nasser, who was recently senior advisor to the Obama administration's special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, joins us. Then finally, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Ellen Schultz joins us. She covered business, finance, and economics for The Wall Street Journal and has investigated the retirement crisis for decades. She is the author of a shocking new book, Retirement Heist: How Companies Plunder and Profit from the Nest Eggs of American Workers. Joining me now is attorney and activist Kevin Zeese, who is the co-director of It's Our Economy, and he's the director of Come Home America and serves on the steering committee of the Bradley Manning Support Network and October2011.org. He's been active in third-party electoral politics and served as Ralph Nader's press secretary and spokesman in 2004. He ran for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat on the Green Party ticket in 2006 and was the only person ever nominated by the Green Party, Libertarian Party, and the Populist Party. He has a blog at michaelmoore.com. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kevin Zeese.
Thanks for having me on.
And Kevin, it certainly strikes me as a somewhat mystifying irony that nobody has gone to jail for the 2008 economic meltdown that has caused this recession that lingers and is getting deeper. And yet, 100 protesters have been arrested for protesting this injustice.
That's right. And if you look at the videos of the protests, you'll find that they didn't do anything that deserved being arrested for. And Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC had an excellent commentary last night that we have on the October2011.org blog that describes one of the incidents where some women who were already captured by the police and behind a plastic holder were pepper sprayed by a commanding officer of the New York Police Department for no reason. And so it's not only being arrested, it's being arrested for no reason and being brutalized. And it's not working. It's actually resulting in a counter effect. You wouldn't be talking to me had it not been for that. The New York Post wouldn't have covered it had not been for that. Lawrence O'Donnell wouldn't have covered it had not for that. And so it's actually spurring more coverage, letting people get to know about it more, and it's actually spurring activity across the country. There's now a website called OccupyTogether.org that has occupations being planned or already ongoing in 41 cities across the country. And October 6th, we'll be doing probably the largest of the events, October2011.org, when we bring Tahrir Square to Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. So the police are trying to, you know, shut this down with force. The media is trying to shut it down by not covering it. But it's growing on its own. It's an organic movement that's developing and is going to have to be dealt with.
And the police inspector, Deputy Inspector Anthony Bologna, that you referred to, Kevin Zeese, who pepper sprayed the young women who were standing behind one of those police orange netted barriers, he's apparently named as a defendant in lawsuits that came out of the police bearing down on protesters during the Republican convention. So what's going on in the city of New York? I just was watching the other night on HBO Larry David's show, and there's a cameo with Michael Bloomberg, and everything is funny and lovely, and he seems like he's the best friend of the progressives and a cool guy. And yet he's clearly in charge, and so is his police commissioner Kelly, and they seem to. I mean, one has to assume that these orders are coming from the top, and they're trickling down.
No question. I think they're definitely coming from the top. You know, Bloomberg is very cozy with the Wall Street folks who dominate New York and dominate New York politics, and they don't want this occupation of Wall Street going on. They're working behind police barricades, these big financiers. That's not their style. They think they are above the law, and they have been treated as above the law. They've been put into the Obama administration rather than prosecuted. They've not been held accountable for their crimes, and they're getting wealthy off of taxpayer bailouts, and people are angry about that. I think Bloomberg is like many politicians. He puts on a face that tries to fool the public. I think that is also common for President Obama, sadly. You know, people think we got sold a great health care program when it basically was produced by Republicans at the American Enterprise Institute and was something that they supported, and in the end, progressives supported because they were fooled. These are professional politicians who have an intense corporate media that is very good at misleading and propagandizing the American public. It's not working, though, in this case, because you're seeing these occupations spread across the country. The lack of media coverage is balanced by the first 3 days of the Wall Street occupation having 1.5 million tweets on Twitter in 3 days, and yet the media isn't covered. What the media is really doing is undercutting themselves. Their credibility keeps diminishing and diminishing as they don't cover right. The police, their credibility diminishes. They get divided. If you see on these tapes of the police, some of the blue-collar police that were in the blue shirts, not the white-collar commanders, one of the blue-collar police, I can't believe he just maced her. You know, he says after the commander maces this woman who's held behind the orange barrier. So I think it's going to create divisions among police. In fact, there's a report that more than 100 police officers stayed home from work the next day to protest the abuse, and we've seen the abuse stop. I think the bad reaction they got in the media and maybe in their own department has led to them playing a very different role in the last couple of days.
Kevin Zeister, Tuesday's New York Times is carrying a story suggesting that the police have been planning for the what might happen in the United States, which what recently happened in England with the riots. That they were sort of overreacting or preempting a threat that didn't exist. I mean,
what's silly about that, Ian, though, is what sparked the riot in England was police abuse.
Right.
And that's what started it. So if the police overreact to peaceful protesters and do some serious damage to somebody, you're going to see a violent reaction. These are peaceful protesters trying to redress serious grievances of an economy in collapse and those who collapsed it profiting from it rather than being prosecuted for it.
And I guess the metaphor of the visual of the police protecting the bull on Wall Street says it all.
I love that visual.
Says it all.
They had the bull surrounded in a police cage in order to protect it from the protesters. I was there to see that. That was quite a vision to behold, was the bull trapped in a police pen.
Again, I'm speaking with Kevin Zeister, attorney and activist, about the protests on Wall Street, and he is organizing to expand the protests to Washington, D.C. On October the 6th, the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. When you mentioned earlier, Kevin, about that this is all being done at the behest of the Wall Streeters inside these big towers, the people that have took the global economy into a near-death experience to the brink of collapse and then were subsequently rewarded by the American taxpayers for their profligacy and their criminality, really. I don't think that is hardly a hyperbole here. Do you feel, though, that the country's starting to wake up? Because one of the most amazing ironies is that the people who really ran with the outrage at Wall Street were, in fact, the Tea Party, who were obviously co-opted by the Kochs and others and turned into a kind of astroturf operation. And I've always been mystified as to why the people, the Main Street America hasn't been up in arms about this.
Well, Main Street America has been up in arms about it. The problem is that the corporate media doesn't cover the people who oppose corporate power are saying. They cover people who support corporate power like the Tea Party. There have been more people arrested at the Wall Street demonstration than turn out for most Tea Party demonstrations. I've seen pictures of Tea Party demonstrations where there are more media than there are protesters. We don't get that on the progressive side when we challenge corporate power because our message undermines the owners of the half dozen news media outlets that exist on television. So because we oppose their power, we don't get covered, but we have on our website on October 2011.org an article that takes a snapshot of protests in the United States and shows that across the country, even putting aside the big protests in Madison and in Michigan and in Ohio against, you know, Republican governors, even putting aside those, there are protests across the country going on all the time. And that's why in this article, which we call Now is the Time, we say this is the time for us to come together in a big way and to make it something that the media cannot avoid but covering. And we've taken the approach on our page, if you look at the media page of October 2011, to build from the independent media up. We have about 75 independent media outlets covering it. We're urging all the people who come to see themselves as the media and bring their flip cams and their cell phones to take pictures. One of the remarkable things in Wall Street when they had that incident with the pepper spray was that attack was videotaped from four or five different people. And so when the police said that they didn't do it or that the whole tape's not being shown, we had four or five independent cameras showing it from different directions on exactly what happened. There's no way for Officer Bologna to deny this anymore because he's been caught on camera. The people are the media. We're at a point in our history where it's democracy versus corporations, participatory democracy versus concentrated finance-based corporations. And democracy of the media is a key battle, and we're seeing that democratization of the media as every single person is able to make news and project news, become a media outlet through Facebook and Twitter and social media and blogs and websites and email lists. We can reach thousands of people. And if the people come together in an intentional way, try to be the media, we can reach millions of people. And so we're approaching a tipping point where the corporate media's credibility is declining and the democratized media is increasing.
And Kevin Zeese, given that the wealthiest 1% has wealth equal to 95% of Americans, and the disparity is growing, and it's pretty clear. We saw the Republicans go to the mat to protect millionaires and billionaires, and then the president comes out with a tax on millionaires or a proposal to tax millionaires and billionaires. He's calling the Buffett rule, but when he announced that, he rather defensively talked about class warfare. The whole press and the mainstream media have bought into this notion of class warfare. They continually bring up this term, which is a defensive term. There's a good piece by Howell Raines, formerly with the New York Times, an editor on CNN, arguing that the progressives and the left and the Democrats should run with class warfare. That's not something to be defensive about. It's a reality.
Well, I think that's how most people on the progressive side feel, that the class warfare has been going on now for decades, and we haven't been fighting back. President Obama's very weak Buffett rule, the idea that a billionaire should pay equal to the secretary, to me is absurd. That should not be, you should be defensive that that's too weak, not too strong. But Obama's in a difficult position. He's trying to run the first ever billion-dollar presidential campaign. He's holding fundraisers that he charges $35,800 for people to attend. That is $1,000 more than the median individual income of Americans. So Americans could not afford to go to one fundraiser of his based on their whole annual salary. We're in a situation now where 400 Americans have wealth equal to the 154 million at the bottom of the American economic ladder. And President Obama is in a divided situation. He has to try to please voters on the left, liberals, progressives, people who see this wealth divide, but he also has to raise $1 billion from people who are the wealthy. So he's defensive because he's got two bosses. And Obama has shown himself in his first term to be a person who believes in market solutions, who's very friendly to Wall Street, who surrounds himself by Wall Street in his White House and on his cabinet, and that is what he's comfortable with. That is what he is. He made a speech to the Chamber of Commerce that laid out his second-term agenda, and it's not a person-friendly agenda. It's a big business-friendly agenda. So people expecting more in his second term are going to be very disappointed. So I think it's very clear Obama has two groups he's trying to please, and that's why he's defensive when he puts forward a very weak tax on the wealthiest.
But he did in 2008, he broke new ground by raising tons of money from small donors.
Well, that's what the media said, but when you look at OpenSecrets.org and compare it to previous elections, it's not all that significant. What he really did that was really breaking new ground in 2008 was he stopped playing by the rules of campaign financing. He dropped out of the campaign financing that undermined further public funding of elections. That did much more damage than anything else that he did as far as elections go. And he's allowed people like Karl Rove to do these anonymous contributions, which are illegal under federal election law. They were not made legal by Citizens United. They're illegal to provide anonymous contributions. They do it through a nonprofit organization, illegally using the IRS laws to circumvent the federal election laws. Obama could stop that right now. If the Department of Justice would enforce the laws, we could have clean elections, at least no anonymous contributions in our elections. But he's not even doing that. Now Obama's going for the first billion-dollar campaign. He is the destructor of money in politics. He is the, about the worst we have seen as far as money in politics goes, despite the image of having a grassroots campaign. It was Goldman Sachs that got him through Iowa.
But just in closing there, Kevin, how does, since our politics are money driven, how does he have a chance against the Republicans? I mean, they've got endless donors as well. I mean, what?
The only way Obama has a chance is if he becomes a populist. That's what most Americans are. On our website, October2011.org, we have on the front page 7 issues that super majorities of Americans support. If Obama adopts those 7 issues, he'll be on the side of 2/3 of the American public. He'll excite the American public and he'll get reelected. If he plays this weak Democrat position that's almost a Republican, some say it is a Republican position, his policies, if he takes that kind of position, it's going to be very hard for people to get excited about his campaign. And if the Republicans don't shoot themselves in the foot and, you know, pick someone like Rick Perry or Bachman, if they pick someone like Romney, I think a lot of Americans will stay home and not vote for Obama. He'll lose. His best hope is the Republicans get extreme or Obama becomes a populist. That's what he needs to do. He needs to represent the people, recognize who his real bosses are. We are the 99%. They are the 1%. Right now, Obama is in the 1% category.
Well, Kevin, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Kevin Zeis, who is an attorney and activist who served as Ralph Nader's press secretary and spokesman in 2004. He ran for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat on the Green Party ticket in 2006 and was the only person ever nominated by the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Populist Party. He's co-director of It's Our Economy, and he's organizing a expansion of the Occupy Wall Street to Occupy Washington, D.C. on October the 6th, the 10th anniversary of the Afghanistan War. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about whether or not the United States and Pakistan can or will get a divorce.